Hello and welcome to the Chengdu Gaming Federation podcast. My name is Charlie. I'm joined here with Austin.
Hello.
Today we're going to be talking about one of our favorite gaming series of all time and one of the most civilized games of all time, which is Sid Meier's Civilization.
Right.
This is a prescient topic to be talking about today because this week the first major expansion for Civilization VI is coming out on February 8th. Yeah, exactly. That's just a couple days from today, and that expansion is called Civ 6 Rise and Fall, which is an expansion focused on the potential for civilizations to rise and collapse due to a number of factors. We'll talk about some of the details of that expansion and kind of what expansions mean in the civilization ecosystem, and also about the origins of the series and kind of how we got into civilization. There's such a long history and heritage behind game and behind Sid Meier, so we'll be talking about all that in this podcast.
Also, I think just touching upon like major differences that have come up and builds that have come up throughout the series.
Yeah, what kind of differences are the first ones that come to mind?
I mean, like one of the biggest things that's come up, I think that first comes to mind is just when Civ 5 came out and introduced the hex-based...
Oh, thing? That's interesting that that's what you think of. I think of Civ 4 and the series going 3D, you know?
Yeah.
But before we get into that, maybe we can explain what Civilization is.
Start out with the inception of the series, I guess.
Yeah, I would be really surprised if anyone's listening to this and doesn't know what Civilization is. But it is a turn-based 4X strategy game. And the 4Xs stand for Explore, Expand, Exploit, and Exterminate. It's basically build a civilization on a macro scale from prehistory up to the near future.
Right.
So it's kind of a historical fiction strategy game. The game is originally designed by Sid Meier, who's one of the most famous game designers in the world.
Yeah, because of mostly due to Civ.
Pretty much entirely due to Civ. The other games which Sid Meier has designed are fairly obscure, especially compared to Civilization.
Yeah.
But he developed...
Sid Meier's Railroad or Sid Meier's Pirates. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's right. I think Pirates is probably his most well-known piece after Civilization. But he developed the first game designed the first game, I should say, in 1991, which is when the first game came out. He also...
He's putting it at almost 30 years, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. I wonder what happens in 2021. Did they do a 30-year...
Thing,
or did they do 25 years?
They did do something for 25, I believe. They marked I don't know, they did something to, they probably had a sale. I don't remember what it was though, but I do remember it came up.
Okay, yeah. So he co-founded the company which developed the game, MicroProse, and later it was changed into Firaxis, which is now Sid Meier's company, which is the publisher of Civilization now. But Sid Meier developed the first game in 1991, and he's played a major role in designing all of the future iterations of the game, including the latest one, Civilization VI.
Right.
The series has an interesting history because many of the designers of previous Civilization games have moved on from Civilization to make their own
Rise
strategy
of Nations
games.
And some other games.
Yeah, exactly. So some examples of this is Bruce Shelley, the Civilization 1 co-designer, created Age of Empires.
Yeah.
Brian Reynolds of Civilization 2 created Rise of Nations, and Soren Johnson, the Civilization 3 co-designer, designed Spore.
I think Brian Reynolds is now at Zynga.
That's not good news.
Yeah, major.
In terms of like respect and credibility, Civilization and Zynga are two opposite ends of the spectrum.
I did Civ 2, and then I went on to go and make Rise of Nations, and now I'm at Zynga. It's like a nice trajectory.
Well, hopefully he's getting paid at Zynga. That's what that's about, working there generally. One of the unique aspects of the Civilization series, which has kind of always been around, is the one more turn syndrome.
Oh, yeah, which we are both, you know.
Which everyone who's played Civ, I think, can identify with. And that's the phenomenon wherein players nearing the end of a play session might rationalize, quote, one more turn because they're compelled to see the effects of whatever recent decisions they've made. And the game has a tendency to make you lose track of time.
Yeah. And even when you meet the victory conditions, you can still choose to play one more turn. and keep playing the game beyond victory.
That's true. They did actually later include just one more turn as an actual button. The phenomenon is attributed to the core gameplay loop that provides players feedback on upcoming goals and rewards that they can obtain by playing additional turns. It's a lot of games have kind of inherited this quality. One of those is Stardew Valley, which is not one more turn, it's one more day.
Yeah.
So as you go to sleep in Stardew Valley, it saves your game, and then you wake up, and as soon as your game is saved, you think, okay, now's the time to exit.
Yeah.
But you want to exit your house and see what crops are there or kind of what's happened over the course of the night. And Civilization is the grandfather of this one more turn syndrome. So it's very well known for that as well.
Before we go further into this discussion, I'm curious what your first experience with Civ was.
Yeah, it was Civilization 3, I believe. I was in high school. Civilization 3, when did that come out? I think it was 2001. You know, I might be mistaken. I think it was Civ 2, actually. So I first saw Civ 2. I had a classmate. I lived in a dorm in high school, and I had a classmate who was playing Civ 2, and he had it on his computer. And I was looking at it, and you know, I was kind of exposed to it then, but I didn't play it then. It wasn't until Civ 4 came out that I started to play it, and it was actually a good friend of mine named Sasha, who I don't think you met, but a lot of people listening to this might know him or know of him. I started Chunda Living with him.
Right.
And so he was a Civilization fan, and Civilization 4 came out in 2005. This was right as I had come out into China.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, the new Civ came out. I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, big deal. It's like, big deal? What? He's like,
big deal.
Yeah, big deal. You know, he was very enthusiastic about Civilization 4, and I watched him play it, and I thought, oh, I remember this game from way back, and I started to get really into it.
Yeah.
And I got really into Civ 4. Which is typical for people who get into Civ, you know, because it goes so deep, you know. I mean, if you...
A lot of people hold Civ 4 as, like, one of the best in the series, too.
You know, Civ 4, I think, on Metacritic is the highest rated one of the entire series, which I find a little surprising, I guess. But since I haven't been playing the series since from the beginning, you know, maybe I don't have the full context of the entire series. But in any case, Civ 4 is when I got in, and Civ 4 introduced the 3D map to the series.
And I was playing it, I told you last week, I think I started playing Civ 4 a bit, and I mean, I played it a little bit before, but I love the, like, the globe view you can have as you, like, zoom out. Like,
that's pretty cool.
And that's
so Civ 4 introduced that, and it also introduced religion and some other elements as well, government, civics, and it had two expansions, Warlords and Beyond the Sword.
Yeah.
Which kind of perfected that game or made it really good, as the expansions tend to do.
Yeah. But
how about yourself? When did you first get into it?
Believe it or not, Revolution.
Oh, really? The iPad one?
Also on console. I played it on Xbox a bit, and that was my first, I think on Xbox 360. I think that was my first experience.
No kidding. That's interesting. Well, those are,
like,
fun.
And it's a really casual game.
It is.
As far as, like, it goes compared to the rest of the series.
Yeah, it's like a mobile or console version.
It's like a dumbed down version of, like, Civ 1 and 2.
It is.
And
it is a dumbed down version. That's right. That came out in 2008.
Streamlined and, like, really fun to play and enjoyable for me. It had a lot of cool things about it that I think kind of made it fun and accessible. But I think my, like, first, like, real deep, like, dive into Civ was probably Civ 5. Because, like you, I had just moved to China when Civ 5 came out.
2010.
And it was a big deal. And I didn't have a lot of friends here. I didn't, you know, have a lot of things to do living in a small city at the time. So I just stayed at home and played Civ, like, all the time.
Civilization has always been willing to be your friend.
Yeah.
At every point in the series, Civilization has always been there to stand in for any social shortcomings you may have.
All encompassing, because, like, when you're not playing it, you just are thinking about, like, well, when I get home, I'm gonna, like, work on these new policies, or I'm gonna, you know.
It does have kind of a consuming quality. Yeah, so there have been six major entrants in the Civ series. Civ 1 starting in 92, Civ 2, 96, Civ 3, 2001, Civ 4, 2005, 2010 for Civ 5, and the most recent version, Civ 6, came out 2 years ago in 2016.
There was also that Activision made when there was like a licensing thing.
What were those called?
There is a Rise to Power or Call to Power.
Oh, and yeah. I think that's not officially in the Civ canon.
It's not officially in the canon, but it has the name Civilization.
Oh, and yeah. Well, there's a Civilization board game, which predates the Sid Meier game.
Yeah, there is. But there's also a Civilization board game that's like a tie-in with the Civilization series.
Oh, there certainly is. Yeah. And there are also a lot of spin-offs too. And Civilization Revolution is one of those spin-offs.
I think like more notable than the Call to Power games, which were a little bit outlandish but pretty ambitious titles, but there was the Alpha Centauri.
Oh, that's one of the spin-offs.
And there was Beyond Earth, which has Civilization in the title. But Alpha Centauri is held in much higher regard, and I think it's a pretty cool concept. And that was during the like whole licensing issue time.
Yeah, I played Alpha Centauri. I mean, not when it was released. It came out in 1999. Alpha Centauri, for those unfamiliar, is basically Civilization in space. It's a game, instead of colonizing Earth, you're colonizing planets.
I mean, it's like kind of a spiritual successor to it. It's like with the end of Civ 1 and 2, the space race has you going to Alpha Centauri. So it's basically like...
Yeah.
The kind of...
That makes sense. Yeah. If you get the space race victory in Civilization, any of the Civilization games, the goal is to establish a spacecraft which can get to Alpha Centauri. And Alpha Centauri is the first planet where humans will colonize after Earth. And it does fit into Civilization very well. And Alpha Centauri was really loved, but unfortunately Beyond Earth was not.
Yeah.
It was very controversial. Got some good reviews from some people, but mostly mediocre.
Alpha Centauri kind of built upon the Civ thing, and a lot of the features in Alpha Centauri went on to be included in later versions of Civ, but Beyond Earth kind of just felt like a tacked on sci-fi port of Civ 5.
It didn't feel so much like a full game as like an expansion of some type. Yeah, so... That, I mean, when you're talking about the Civ series, Beyond Earth is kind of like a bullet point that you might mention rather than something that you would go deep into depth on.
Whereas Alpha Centauri is like a stepping stone for the series in between games.
In preparing for this podcast, did you read about how many sales the Civilization series has had?
It's like surpassed 40 million last year, I think.
Yeah. So in February of 2017, the series had shipped more than 40 million total units. Which seems like a lot, but GTA 5 has actually sold twice as many, 80 million alone.
Wow.
Yeah. Put into that context, that really gives some perspective to
that
number.
I mean, that is GTA, though.
So. GTA is one of the best-selling games of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure, Civilization is one of the most popular strategy game series in all of gaming history.
But it's also a strategy game, which is not necessarily... I mean, it's had its peak, you know, like...
You think so?
I mean, we might come back up, but I mean, it's definitely a lot lower than it used to be.
Really?
Don't you think so? Look at like the, at least as far as commercial games that come out, you know, I mean, Civ, XCOM, both from Firaxis.
Yeah.
There's not like a lot of major publishers putting out strategy titles these days as there were before.
Yeah, you might be right. That's interesting. I mean, have sales gone down or do you have any idea of that?
I don't know if sales have gone down, but games coming... I would assume they've gone down just with the number of games that are coming out. Publishers aren't interested in, you know, producing games like that now because they're probably not achieving the sales numbers.
Interesting. That would be interesting to look into, to see the evolution of the strategy genre and how Civilization has worked into that. But regardless, very famous, very well-known. Civ 6, this new update, which is coming out soon, is certainly going to sell like gangbusters.
Absolutely. Before we get into that, I think we should touch upon like differences between games and the major updates that have come with each game and how the series has progressed. So we kind of touched upon how like the base game of Civilization works, which has not been like drastically changed the core gameplay since the first game, but each game has added like big new features. So we could like start out talking about Civ 2 and go through sequentially through them.
What you got?
So Civ 2 was the first game was just overhead square view, and the second game introduced an isometric view of the series. There is also HP based on the unit stats. Before it was just a fixed number, so the stats could affect the HP of units. Your reputation affected the diplomacy, and we got unique city graphics. Civ 2 was also the first point where the series got spies introduced. Spies are like a
pretty major. They added a bunch of spy functionality into four. I think one of the Civ 4 updates.
Civ 4, there was an expansion where you could do
espionage
points to like purchase abilities and a specialist unit as well for Civ 4.
Yep.
So there was also Civ 2 with a pollution introduced, and there was a global warming timer. And this one guy played Civ 2 for about 10 years after his, like, on one game for about 10 years.
Until the whole planet was a wasteland?
He said there were three people left and stuck in a 1,700-year war. The ice cap supposedly melted 20 times somehow.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw that. I think, like, Kotaku or something published an article about that not long ago. Something like, this guy's been playing Civ 2 for 20 years or something.
It's pretty crazy, though, to think about, like, sticking with one game for that long.
And you know what, though? I've noticed a lot of people do this with the Civ series. I've got friends. I mean, you mentioned you just were playing Civ 4. I've got a friend who I think still plays Civ 5 and has for 5 years.
I have a few friends who still play Civ 5. I have a few friends who choose Civ 5 over Civ 4 for numerous reasons.
Oh, Civ 5 over Civ 4, of course.
I mean, Civ 5 over Civ 6.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people have done that. And the reason, one of the big reasons why, is because it's widely believed within the Civ community that a major Civ release does not really
become good
until the updates are released. The major updates are released, like Rise and Fall, this new Civ 6 update. And so a lot of people, Fanatics in particular, who you can find at civfanatics.com or on the reddit.com/r/civcommunity, a lot of those Fanatics will skip on Civ 6 until the big updates are released.
It's totally understandable, I think, too. I mean, like, the updates kind of really drastically change the thing.
They improve them dramatically.
And Civ 5, like, it's interesting to think about how Civ 6 is going to change from its base play. I mean, there are features that are kind of, I think, lacking in the vanilla version of the game that, you know, will obviously be different areas.
Let's go through this list and get to Civ 6.
So Civ 3 introduced the Golden Age, which is a big thing with the upcoming Civ 6 DLC. Golden Ages are a huge part of that. And Civ 3 was the first one to introduce Golden Ages.
Also, cultural victories, takeovers of nearby cities.
And you had culture and border expansions, which Civ 1 and 2 had like super small city limits. So that's like kind of a big part of the series, being able to expand your territory so much. It also introduced the great people and unit upkeep, which can be like pretty tough if you have like a large army, you know, and you're just kind of eating through resources trying to like maintain such a large army but unable to, you know, produce enough resources. And you could purchase units with gold, which is part of how like getting such a large army can happen and then running out of those resources.
Yep.
So now on to Civ 4, which you said was your first kind of deep foray into the series, right?
That's right.
So we have health systems for cities. That's kind of cool. Unhealthy cities consume more food and grow slower or decay. More great people, and introduced like greatly expanded civics. You have like 5 different trees.
I think the big thing with Civ 4 was that it was 3-dimensional.
Yeah.
That allowed you to zoom in and out. It had much more impressive presentation visually.
And that, I think it's still really cool being able to zoom out and get the globe view. It just looks, even though the like graphics are a little dated, that the way it does that zoom on it is, I think, even more impressive than 5 or 4, the way zooming in.
5 or 6.
I mean, 5 or... Why do I keep doing that?
And then Civ 5 introduced a really big change by switching from a square to a hex-based map.
Yeah, which is like huge.
And also another huge thing was unstacking the military units.
Yeah.
That was such a big change. Prior to Civ 5, I remember this from Civ 4, you would have what were called stacks of doom.
Yeah.
which would be like dozens of units on one square.
Yeah.
And so you would be in a war with somebody and there'd be a single square with like dozens of units on it. It felt like such bullshit. It was so frustrating. I really felt so good about unstacking the military units. It completely changed the strategy of the game. And creating the hex space layout was also much better because it allows you to arrange your units much more strategically when you're sieging a city, which made combat just a lot more satisfying. Gratifying. In Civ 5. Yeah. Exactly. Going back to Civ 4 feels really old just for these two things, stack units and squares.
Which is interesting because those aren't even like graphical things or anything. I mean, graphically, the game looks great, I think. Still, even today, Civ 5 looks great. But I mean, it was just those things that affected. No, Civ 5 looks great.
Sure, it does. Yeah.
But it was those simple design choices that they chose to make that like affected the series in such a huge way.
Yeah.
They also had city states in 5. You remember the city states?
Yeah.
Those weren't a part of the series.
Like Hong Kong, Singapore.
Yeah, those kind of things.
Right.
Those are kind of cool. Be able to like trade with them and stuff.
And then the biggest update in Civ 6 might have been unstacking cities. This is one of the things which
the districts that you have, the different areas that you can
this
set
is,
up.
Yeah, this is the biggest thing that I noticed going back to Civ 5.
Absolutely the biggest thing in Civ 6.
Right, and not having this in Civ 5 kind of sucks. I've been playing Civ 5 recently, and just not having
the
unstacked city arrangement is just not nearly as good. It seems like the biggest
fun.
Thing.
There's not as much like strategy in managing your cities.
Right. I mean, you really have to choose very carefully what you want to prioritize in Civ 6 with your city. Whereas with Civ 5, you're just like, fuck it, I'll just build everything. Like every option for a city you can just build because there's no limit.
Yeah. Civ 5 and Civ 6 also have tourism, which I think is kind of cool. You can like have particular districts of your city that cater to tourism, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And Civ 5 had the added a lot to religion. Religion just felt like, to me in the series, felt like really tacked on. I mean, compared to what it is in 6, where you can have a religious victory and like it can affect your so many different aspects of your civilization. But like being able to get a victory through religion is a pretty big thing in Civ 6.
It is. And so 2016 was the release of Civilization 6. And then just recently, about 2 months ago, Civilization 6 was ported over to iPad. For a $60 purchase is what it costs now.
It's pricey. Came out purchase.
December 21st. Exactly.
It's a good game.
It's a great game. I don't know if it's worth it at $60 on iPad, but I purchased it in the first month when it was available for half price at $30.
It's definitely worth $30.
I think it's totally worth it. I think the game is Civ 6 is maybe best on iPad from my experience.
Does Civ 6 have touchpad support for PC? I know 5 did, but that's kind of a whack feature.
Who cares? Who cares, right? Does anybody use that on PC? I don't even know anybody who does. But in any case, if you have a newer iPad, an iPad Pro especially, or an iPad from the last 2 years, it can run Civilization 6, and it just performs really well. It's really satisfying to play with touch controls. And that is the most recent major release from Civilization, actually.
One other thing that I just remembered, one huge thing I think in Civ 6 is that the workers now have limited use, right? So like when you build a worker, there's like 3 or 4 like people there. And each time you use them, you lose one of them. And after you use a worker unit 3 or 4 times, they're gone. You have to build a new one.
That makes sense.
Because I remember in Civ 5, like early game, you would build like all these workers to kind of like do to
Civ 4 too.
Yeah, and then late
at
game,
the end you have like dozens.
Why do I have all these workers and what do I do with them?
Right, you know? Just like kill them.
Yeah,
just like let them die.
Yeah, because they end up eating your up your resources and stuff. Yeah,
exactly.
So
now that we're on Civ 6, let's talk about this expansion, which is coming out in just a few days. Are you going to buy it first of all?
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to buy it day one. Yeah. What about you?
Yep, I think I am too.
I mean, I forgot to check. I think I didn't put a ton of hours into Civ 6 yet, but I put like a good amount and I'm looking forward to putting more hours in.
I've got about 60 hours.
I think I have 60 hours about as well. And with the holidays coming up, got some downtime to just geek out on Civ, so...
Yeah, it's actually really good timing for Chinese New Year.
Yeah.
The Civ 6 update is coming out just the week of Chinese New Year or the week before it starts.
So let's talk a little bit about the things that they're going to be adding in this DLC and what you're most excited about.
Yeah, so the focus of the Rise and Fall expansion is to add mechanics that emulate the potential for civilizations rise and collapse due to a number of factors. And the producer left a comment on this and said, "What we're trying to capture here is the ups and downs, sort of riding the waves through history that is so paramount when you look back at our world." Cool. So there are a couple big new features. You want to talk about those? Global eras, I guess, is the first one.
Timeline is the biggest new feature. No, I'm just joking. That's timeline. It's cool. I'll talk about that in a minute, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. The Great Ages. I think that's kind of pretty interesting and probably the one that I'm most interested in. Just it's going to, you know, be playing out over like the course of a game. You have your golden ages or whatever, but you can now, depending on how you're running your cities, you can have a dark age, but if you over and you can have great ages as well. But if you run through a dark age well, your next golden age, if you overcome certain challenges or difficulties during the dark age, your next age will be considered a heroic age and your cities will prosper a lot more.
Yeah, I saw them. They made a comment which said they wanted players to have risk and reward play for challenging themselves through a dark age.
Yeah, which seems like really interesting to be able. I think it'll affect like a lot more kind of meta mechanics of the game and in between like larger things that you're working towards.
Dark age seems kind of tough.
Yeah.
doesn't sound like a good thing to have to navigate through. It can be really difficult. I just started a game this last week on Civilization 5.
Right.
And I'm playing as not Gandhi, but one of the other most dangerous leaders, who's Genghis Khan.
You're playing against him or you're playing
No,
as
I'm
him?
Playing as Genghis him. Khan. Oh, yeah. And I'm going for a conquest victory. And I'm having a real tough time holding my society together because I'm constantly at war. And it's like a life of like hardship and combat. And my citizenry are like, we are not happy like at all.
Yeah,
so I can imagine going through a dark age. It's got to be really tough to keep it together. Yeah,
that would be in that kind of situation for you, I think. And having a dark age could like totally... Well, actually, going into one of the next things, your cities in the update will have loyalty. So if you were in that situation you're in Civ 5, you could have like all your cities have uprisings and revolts and potentially declare independence from you and become city states.
Yeah, I read that also. So all cities include a loyalty rating, which is affected by golden or dark ages. Loyalty in cities is boosted by keeping the population happy.
It's a pretty cool feature, I think. Could be like really interesting because you could also potentially steal cities from your rivals.
That's exactly what I read. I read that if a city's loyalty drops to zero, it becomes a free city no longer controlled by you and then can be taken by any other civilization through military or through exerting its own loyalty by nearby cities.
I think exerting loyalty sounds like so cool. Just being able to like kind of just... I'm going to send this city some gifts and like...
It sounds there and similar like, to taking it by culture. You know, yeah. Previously you could use like a culture bomb with like a great artist.
Yeah.
And that would take over their borders and then cities on the borders if the proximity of that works out.
Speaking of culture, I think Civ 6 doesn't have the diplomacy victory, right? You can't form the United Nations and all that.
Is that true?
Pretty sure it doesn't. Civ 5 has that, but Civ 5 doesn't have the... it has the same number of victory conditions as Civ 5 does, but it removed the diplomacy one and added religion.
That's interesting. I didn't know that was taken away as a victory condition.
I mean, maybe that'll be the next DLC adding to that.
Yeah, but that would make sense. I mean, it looks like the next major DLC will probably be 1 or 2 years away. It seems like this is kind of
When did Civ 6 come out? A year
Civ
ago?
6 came out in 2016. That's right. And so this update is coming out in February 2018.
It's like a year and a half later.
About a year and a half. That's right. And it seems to be about 6 years between major iterations. So if that's true, then Civ 7 might come out like 2021. So that means 2018 for this update. Next update, maybe 2019, or late 2019 or early 2020. And then a year or a year and a half after to get Civ 7. And so we'll see what happens there.
It's
also,
a trip to think about Civ 7.
Also included in this update are a bunch of new civilizations and leaders.
That'll
and
be
there
exciting.
Are already so many.
So many.
There's so many choices.
But there's like a bunch of people who are like crazy about Civ and, like, you know, about the whole series. And there's so many people who, when, like, a new Civ come out, that are like, hey, where is blah, 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 or whatever. They're, like, missing their favorite leader. They're missing their, you know, whatever.
Yeah, so, you know, one cool thing that was also added in Civilization VI, which we didn't talk about, is agendas.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to bring that up. That's pretty cool. I think that makes the single player a lot more interesting.
Yeah, so
the some of them Civilization have hidden agendas, right?
Civ 6, all of them have a hidden agenda. Yeah. So they all have two agendas. They introduced a new feature called leader agendas, which are boilerplates for how AI leaders behave. Cleopatra, for instance, likes other civilizations that have strong militaries and will try to ally with them. Queen Victoria favors civilizations with cities on her continent and will try to expand to all continents available. Gandhi's historical leader agenda is called Peacekeeper. Fitting in with his role in actual history, he will never declare wars in which he can be branded a warmonger, and he will befriend other peaceful nations and denounce violent ones.
But in 6-6, he still has the that Easter egg, right? The yes. throwback to...
Yes. This is one of the most interesting, like, trivia tidbits about yeah. Civilization. I think we might have mentioned this on a previous podcast.
I think we did. Yeah.
Right. So Gandhi has long had a reputation for being the most violent and like warmonger-like leader in Civilization.
He's got like a... They all have ratings, and he's got a rating of 1. He's like the most peaceful person in the game.
He had a rating of 1.
Yeah. And but if you go for a diplomacy victory, everybody's rating goes back 2, and his would go back to 250. Would go from 1 to 0 to 255, the highest rating, and immediately try to nuke everybody.
Actually, yeah, so that's one. There's one little minor thing I think you got wrong there, which is he started with the lowest possible score of 1 on his aggression rating.
Aggression, yeah.
But when a player adopts democracy. In Civilization, their aggression would automatically be reduced by 2. Code being code, if Gandhi went democratic, his aggression wouldn't go to -1. It would loop back to ludicrously high figure of 255,
yeah,
making him as aggressive as a civilization could possibly be, which has introduced a whole legacy of Gandhi being the most dangerous, nuke-happy leader you can possibly encounter in the game.
It's pretty funny.
And the civilization developers, since that bug, have maintained this bug and kept him as a notoriously violent, dangerous neighbor to have. So if you see Gandhi near you, that immediately you start defending yourself or planning for defense.
Yeah. Or just don't adopt democracy, right?
Don't adopt democracy. Yeah, that's a good way to keep the peace.
Yeah. So one of the other things they've got, I don't know how you feel about this, the governors, the people are like pretty goofy looking. We commented on that.
Oh, yeah, in the game group. Yeah,
but
they look like fat cartoon characters. Yeah. How does the governor functionality work?
So they can be appointed to various cities and maybe help boost loyalty of the city or give you the chance to like build certain things that you wouldn't be able to otherwise, things like that. But they have different effects on like each city, and you can appoint different governors to each cities, and each governor has their own attributes and benefits.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, and there's also the emergencies. So if like one of the civs gets too powerful, there can be a pact.
This would be like if one civ gets nuclear weapons, then that triggers an emergency.
Right, and then everybody's like, we need to join up against, you know, whatever country this is, whatever civilization.
Oh,
and
right. Okay. So
bonuses.
Yeah. So this is included in the update, and this is actually part of a larger feature which allows civilizations to form alliances with other ones based on specific goals, such as a scientific alliance to share research, or an economic alliance to specialize in trade routes, or one a defense alliance, which can include certain actions if a civ launches a nuclear weapon,
right,
for example.
Pretty cool. And then the other thing I mentioned earlier, which is like the least exciting addition, but is the timeline. So they have like a visual kind of representation that you can look at all the major historical moments that you've experienced through a game. But it is kind of cool because, I mean, it's not a huge thing and it's not a game-changing feature either. But I don't know about you, but when I play Civ, you know, like it plays out in my head is this kind of grand story about like through history and everything that's pretty interesting. And I think being able to look back on what you've done throughout your this current playthrough or whatever, it could be interesting.
So previously, I mean, you had a timeline before, right? It was like a chart which would appear when you finish your game, and you can change it to military strength or economic strength or other indicators of progress.
It's not like that. It's like a timeline that like kind of marks your different you know, historical moments that you have, whether or not it's discovering writing or whatever, you know, those kind of things, as opposed to just looking at the timeline of the statistics of like military unit or upkeep or production or whatever. It's a visual timeline of major achievements in your civilization as it goes from its birth to the end.
I see. You know, one thing that I kind of regret that is not emphasized in this update is artificial intelligence. I feel like the shortcomings of the artificial intelligence in Civ 6 in particular has been one of the biggest issues that I've had with the game, and judging by Steam reviews, also one of the biggest issues that the larger player community has had with Civilization 6. When playing in single player, in particular against AI civs, the civs just do a lot of really illogical things, and I've heard
a lot of illogical.
That's right. I mean, like, for example, if they're attacking, you're at war with an AI civ and they send units into your territory, and you would think that they would just come to sack your cities immediately, but instead they just like waste their time, you know, not hitting your cities.
Well, what difficulty are you playing on?
I've played on Prince and King. Those are kind of my main two.
Yeah.
And I started a new game in Civ 5 on Prince difficulty, and it's really hard. I'm not winning, so I might.
I think Civ 5's much more balanced AI, but it's like, you know, older. But you would think that like...
It's hard to imagine how the AI could regress.
Yeah,
but it does.
I don't understand how AI could regress, because you'd think they would be building upon things as the series goes along.
And you would think that. But yeah, that does seem to be the case with Civilization 6. It was a major criticism when the game launched in 2016. I know that they've made a lot of progress on that since then. There was some online editorials which were published 5 months after the launch of Civ 6, and they said, hey, you should go back and try Civ 6 because they've fixed a lot of the AI issues that were in the launch version of the game. But even with that said, I feel like the lack of really great artificial intelligence at Civ 6 is one of the major things that I think it's missing.
I mean, I'm assuming they're going to continue to work on and tweak and update the game, but I mean, I would like it to just be better than Civ 5 out of the box.
Of course, you know? Of course. Everyone wants that.
and I mean, with the way things are going, it seems like by the time the game is finished and said and done, we're going to be looking at a product with AI comparable to Civ 5, probably.
Yeah, and I mean, comparable to AI from a 2010 game is like not a really high bar.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not like a real high mark. You would hope that Civ 6 AI could be a lot better than the AI that was in a 2010 game.
Right.
So that does seem like one of the major issues or one of the major challenges, because one thing that really separates Civilization from almost every other game in strategy or just in a larger gaming world is the complexity of Civilization. It is incredibly complex. I think if I were to, it's like 4D chess, you know, it's like extremely complex turn-based strategy.
Well, I think having a good AI is a huge thing for this series, just because playing single player in a lot of ways is the best way to play it, because of the time constraints of playing the game.
That's a good point. Yeah, we've actually played, when Civ 6 came out, we played the game online with some people in the CGF group. We have a WeChat group for Civ multiplayer play.
And that went on for like 2 months before it slowly fizzled off or something, I think.
Yeah, it's just a difficult
game
to play
multiplayer.
And we
didn't even finish it. We didn't even finish it.
I know. It's really difficult to play multiplayer just because the time commitment is so intense. And it doesn't seem like a game that's really made for multiplayer unless you're incredibly determined to finish a match. But one thing that we enjoyed most, I think, was just playing
the scenarios in the new one are really good, because they're short, fast, to the point, and put you in an interesting situation that you wouldn't be in normally.
Right. So the scenarios require that you achieve a goal which is much smaller in scope than the normal Civ goal, which is start in prehistory and go to near future, which can take hours up until dozens of hours for one game.
Yeah.
And these scenarios usually take, I'd say, like 3 hours to complete.
I would say it's realistic to assume that at a standard game speed and on a standard sized map with a good group of, you know, like 6 to 8 or whatever civilizations, you're looking at a 15 to 25 hour match.
It depends on what map size you choose. It depends on what speed you play at. That's what I'm saying
with like a standard size map with like 6 to 8 civilizations or whatever you're looking at the standard speed. That's what I'm saying. You're looking at like a 15 to 25 hour game. If you do it like the fastest.
I don't think I've ever played one that lasted that long. I've never played. I mean, I've played at, it could have a lot to do with how you play it too. You know, how much time you spend in between rounds, you know, and so on. But I think the longest game I've ever played might have been like 10 hours.
On multiplayer, you mean?
No. Oh. On single player. I mean like standard map, standard speed. But usually I play on a smaller map with quicker speed just because the normal speed is just so incredibly slow. Yeah, exactly. I played for maybe 2.5 hours on one night in the last week. And I played on a small map with quick speed. And I went from like 4,000 BC when you start up until 950 AD.
Wow.
So that's maybe like halfway through the game.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Because as you get in closer to modernity in civilization, time goes slower. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when you're in BC time, or when you start the game, each turn is like hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And then as you get into a later game, each turn is like
a few years.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like 10 years between each turn.
Yeah, interesting. Makes sense, though, with the technological advancements you get, like, in those few years are, like,
Time goes faster as you get into modernity, yeah. Anything else to mention about Civilization before we wrap this up?
Not really. I think we touched on pretty much everything. And, I mean, until this new one comes out, I can't really even contemplate much about, like, where the series is going to go. So I'm just looking forward to playing the new one.
You know, one thing I'm kind of curious about is why there have not been any newer adaptations of mobile versions.
That is weird.
You know, because Civilization Revolutions, I thought it was pretty successful, right?
It was relatively successful. And I think it was fun and casual is the main thing that, like, the rest of the series doesn't really... It's not appealing to casual gamers at all. It's an incredibly deep game, and Civilization Revolutions kind of tapped into what makes the series so fun, but allowed it to be accessible to a group of people who may have never touched upon it otherwise.
Right, and so with Firaxis actually working with another publisher to make the iPad version, but regardless, there's a new iOS adaptation of Civilization 6, which is really great, very well reviewed, commands a very high price, and in a lot of people's minds deserves it. You would think that along with this, they would be making some kind of mobile adaptation, especially for iPhone, because Civilization Revolutions maybe is still available on the App Store, but even if it is, it's like 8 years old. It's ancient at this point.
Yeah.
So you would think that they would make some kind of new version of that. I think it would be a no-brainer, kind of, considering how big mobile is and how big Civilization is and the legacy and history and heritage of the series. But maybe we'll see that.
Like a casual thing, it would be great for like a mobile game with all sorts of in-app purchases for like different leaders or like whatever, you know, you could like, I mean, there's all different ways they could go about it. And it could be like a really successful game with multiplayer components. That would be great for mobile, just being able to pull it out or something and have like, you know, get notifications that it's your turn to take a turn or whatever. So
The Civilization series does have a kind of a history of missteps with casual adaptations as well, with the, I think Civilization World is what it was called, which was the Facebook game, the Civilization Facebook game. Did you play that?
No, I never played Facebook game ever.
Okay, so they made Civilization for Facebook, and the idea was that it was a social game that you play with other people. That's, it was a massive flop. It was a huge flop. It didn't go well at all.
I got goosebumps thinking about it.
Why?
Civilization on Facebook?
Yeah.
Just sounds bad.
Did you ever play any games on Facebook?
Zero.
Like Farmville? Nothing? You ever tried it?
No, that sounds like a colossal waste of time.
It was a massive phenomenon at the time. I mean, in a previous podcast, you said you didn't know what Zynga was, and I was shocked by that. But in any case, Facebook was a massive gaming platform for a period, and that was when social games just began. I mean, they didn't really exist before Facebook as a games platform. So that promised the new future of games where people can play together really easily. So it's easy to see the attraction of that.
Yeah.
But Civ didn't work out on Facebook, and Facebook didn't work out as a games platform to begin with,
yeah.
which is a larger issue than just Civilization. But maybe Firaxis' apprehension about mobile has something to do with this kind of spotty yeah. history of casual adaptations. Yeah.
So is there anything else you're playing right now?
Yeah, I've been playing Celeste a lot.
Oh,
Celeste
yeah.
has been my main game. It's made by Matt Makes Games, creator of Towerfall, which is one
fantastic.
Of our favorite multiplayer games. And I just got NBA Playgrounds on Switch also. I've been playing that.
Yeah, about time. You can finally get it here in China.
Yeah, we talked about NBA Playgrounds. NBA Playgrounds is an NBA Jam sort of spiritual successor.
Civilization Playgrounds.
Unavailable in the China Steam store.
Yeah.
So it's been difficult to get. You had to go through Facebook requests with friends to get the game. And I kind of considered that, but didn't really want to do it. And now it's on sale on Switch for $10.
$10. Good deal.
Yeah, good deal. Very reasonable. Runs really well on the Switch. And I've been playing that. But the better of the two games for sure is Celeste.
Celeste
is the top game I played this year. I think it's going to be in the game of the year discussion at
cool,
the end of
cool.
the year. I'm doubtful that it's going to be like game of the year. I don't think a game
yeah.
like that could really be considered game of the year.
But it's noteworthy.
It's noteworthy, I think.
Yeah, I'm
yeah.
looking forward to playing it.
I mean, had it come out in 2017, it would have been in the, you know, game of the year, top 10 game of the year discussion for sure.
Cool. I finally beat The Evil Within, which we're going to talk about soon.
Yep.
You need to spend some more time on that. But other than that, that was good. I had fun with that. Started playing The Forest again, which has been a really fun single-player experience. And I just beat Inside finally last night.
Oh, great. Yeah. How'd you feel about that?
Felt really good about it, but like did not really enjoy the resolution of the story as much as Limbo.
Really?
Yeah, like Limbo kind of, I felt like, was just like a simple narrative and like a little bit easier to understand and was deep, but like left some room to interpretation, but wasn't like raising all these questions. And Inside is like a ton of questions, like why are there these mind control devices? What happened to the world? Where are you? You know, what happened, like, without going into what happens at the ending or anything, but
yeah.
It raises a lot of questions.
I enjoyed them both deeply. I liked Inside a lot more, though. After completing Inside, it felt like Limbo was like a test version for Inside. It
I felt like the animation, the color, the art, sound design.
Oh, much better.
Everything much better.
Much better.
In Inside, it's a beautiful looking game. The mechanics of it are on point. There's nothing really difficult about it in the same way that like the platforming was in Limbo. It keeps like your momentum going forward with a few like difficult
puzzles. I didn't
puzzles.
Find either of them that difficult. They're both short games. You can finish them both in one sitting.
Yeah. So, but that was a great game. I had a lot of fun with that.
Inside was a 2017 release, right? I think it was one of the best games of the year.
I think it was 2017.
Yeah, that was yeah. That
and
was
I think
in the discussion.
Playdead's working on a new game now. So
amazing. Looking yeah. forward to that.
Yeah.
Great. Cool. Well, thank you for listening to the podcast. We hope you enjoyed this and hope you check out the new Civilization expansion like we will.
Yeah.
If you're interested in checking out more episodes of the podcast, you can find those on our website at shundugaming.com or on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this podcast, we would really enjoy a review on Apple Podcasts. It does help with visibility. Thanks a lot. Catch you next time.
Later.